Just a tickle. Just a tickle in my
All right, that's one way to put it.
I'm good to go.
All right, so normally we jump right in and we say, okay, is there... Well, I guess we could start how we always do. So I guess I'll just throw it over to you. If you could only tell somebody, what's the most interesting thing that you heard when you listened to Jocko podcast number 20?
If I was telling somebody, it'd be like, hey, did you know Mao, the guy responsible for millions and millions and millions upon millions of deaths in China, actually wrote a really good book. and he wrote about, like, you know, like everybody's got to be involved, like this beautiful, there was beautiful lines about the collective and how everybody worked together. You could see, like, the seeds of communism were you know, planted early in this guy, but I don't know where he went wrong.
Well, probably being responsible to anywhere from 40 to 8 million deaths is probably a good place to start where you go wrong. You know what's funny? I was doing...
Well, you start with one death, and then you get to 80 million.
Yeah, you got to keep going, right? But I was doing some... Just reading through his, like, Wikipedia page right before we recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because it goes on. This paragraph is just like... You know, he's known for modernizing the nation, building it into world power, promoting the status of women, improving education and healthcare, increasing life expectancy. And then it said, conversely, his regime has been called autocratic and totalitarian.
Totalitarian.
Yeah, and then he goes, it was additionally responsible for vast numbers of deaths, with estimates ranging from 30 to 70 million. It's like, maybe you want to start there. Like, hey, he gave us clean water and promoted the status of women. And then increased life expectancy, except for, you know, the 40 to 80 million people that died as a result. So their life didn't expectancy certainly didn't go up.
It's pretty crazy.
I do agree with your point, though. I mean, there's just a lot of good. This is something I always talk about. I think especially in today's modern social media age, something that people are like losing the ability to do is learn from people they disagree with. And I think learning from people you disagree with is like a fundamental life skill. I just ordered the book. It didn't get here in time for this podcast, but I am going to read it because based on Jocko's, you know, highlights, this guy has a lot of useful information that we can apply to other areas of our lives for sure.
Yeah. I try to tell my wife that all the time. It's just like people you disagree with are, They shouldn't just be like cast away and that's it. No, you need to learn from what they're saying, because sometimes it could be valid. So this is just one of those examples. Like, this guy had some good things to say, but then he went down the wrong road somewhere down the line. But this book was like recommended by, you know, other guys we talked about, like Hackworth wanted everybody to read it. I can't recall the names of other guy, but if it was good enough for Hackworth, it was good enough for Jocko, and that's why it was on Jocko podcast.
Well, so I'm gonna jump in. I'm just gonna go through all my notes, but if I can only select one of the notes, it's actually something that didn't even come from the book. It came from Jocko's realization while reading the book on the podcast. And he says, at some point in my life, I'm going to stop being amazed at the fact that the basic principles of life have been around for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And for whatever reason, we just have to constantly relearn them.
Yeah.
And that's definitely what I've been noticing going through. We talked a lot about, we've both been going through like the old Stoic literature, some of which have been written, you know, 2,500 years ago. And it's amazing how so little about human life has actually changed. As far as like behavior, things that you worry about, reactions that you have. You texted me something last night, and then I just found out it was a passage from a book that you're reading that I feel like the author's Ryan Holiday. The book you're reading is The Obstacle is the Way. And what I've seen you text me, and then what I've also seen you post about the book on Instagram, it seems that he's drawing a lot of his writing isn't heavily influenced by history. Is that accurate?
Oh yeah, heavily.
What do you think? I mean, are you far enough in the book that you could already recommend it to people, or like, what are you learning from reading that? By the way.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I put it down and I pick it up every once in a while. I love reading that book before we do podcasts or before I listen to a podcast to do a podcast. It just seems like it just it just gets my mind moving. And it's a great, what, did you drop the toast?
No, that was my, the Yeti cup that I actually got for being in your wedding that I use every day. Sorry.
Well, as I was saying, it gets the juices flowing, man. It's like I said that thing to you about like General Washington.
Yeah.
in his chapter about flanking. And I was just like, I love writing like this because you think that these heroes just kind of, you know, raised up American flag and just stormed a line. No, they were smart. They were calculating. They were always looking for weaknesses. They were turning disadvantages into advantages. And then we just celebrate like the character of George Washington, or even like Abraham Lincoln. The thing in my mind is like, I see like, you've seen the, what was it? It was kind of like a meme where they just had George Washington with like an M16 and the American flag, and like that's how it's like looked at.
I haven't seen that one.
And this is that was like truly a good chapter because it kind of touches on Washington's guerrilla tactics, on how he was way more better at withdrawing than advancing. Like that was his strength, was he knew to withdraw and save men from unnecessary clashes. And I thought that was like brilliant.
I want to read it on the podcast real quick because I do to your point, it's like, oh, we always think that these great men of history or great people of history, whatever you want to call it, they like knew, they like had an idea and they just followed that idea through. And it's like, that's usually not how it is. Like, life is chaotic. Combat is chaotic. You have to have the ability to adapt. And I do think that these two paragraphs is in line very much with what we learned by listening to the Jocko talk about Mao Zedong. So this is a text that you sent me. It's from Obstacles Away. It says, they're speaking about George Washington. It's like, his most glorious victory wasn't even a direct battle with the British. Instead, Washington, nearly at the end of his rope, crossed the Delaware at dawn on Christmas Day to attack a group of sleeping German mercenaries who may or may not have been drunk. And then this is the important part where it kind of reminds me, I've been studying the writing of Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger lately. Eventually going to turn that into a podcast for founders. But one of their key things is like, just don't die. I mean, like, you have to live long enough to reap the benefit of compound interest and compound, like, in terms of building wealth. And so their rule number one is don't lose money. Rule number two is adhere to rule number one. I forgot the exact wording, but it's basically, there's only one rule, don't lose money. So in the other case, I want to bring that up because this next paragraph I'm going to read is like Washington's rule number one. Don't die. That's how you win a war. You don't die, right? So he says, he was actually better at withdrawing than advancing, skilled at saving troops that otherwise would have been lost in defeat. So we have a million examples of people just doing the opposite, just throwing bodies and making themselves weaker. Washington rarely got trapped. He always had a way out, hoping simply to tire out his enemy. This evasiveness was a powerful weapon, though not necessarily a glamorous one. No. I just think that's perfect for exactly what Mao is telling us, where it's just like, listen, if you're a guerrilla fighter, right, you have advantages very distinct and different from a large military power, which we've seen countless examples of, whether it be Vietnam, the Chechens versus the Russians. It's not like you just go into battle and automatically the larger military is going to win nowadays. That's just not the case.
Nope, not the case.
So let's see, what are notes? I guess I'll just go in order. This is something that's holds true for me too. This is Jocko talking, and he says, what is shocking is the military and leadership theories he espouses actually align with my own. This guy was one of the founders of the Chinese Communist Party. I'm a believer in individual freedom of human beings. And to me, that just proves that, like, I think that's fundamentally, Rob, why in general, I'm more interested in ideas than people.
Yeah.
Because
they're more important
ideas,
than people.
Well, no, yeah, they last longer. You could have ideas written down by somebody 3,000 years ago that still will be helpful to somebody today, as opposed to like their biological life has come to an end a long time ago. They're extremely powerful. They can be transmitted through time, across borders, across cultures. And so I think this book is a great example of that, because you couldn't have two more diametrically opposed people than Jocko and Mao Zedong, you know? when you actually listen to like the principles that he like guides his life by, which one of those, and something that's extremely important to me, is the individual freedom of human beings, not to be controlled, not to live their lives out through slavery, whether it's caused by a government, a military, a religion organization, whatever. I do think people at a fundamental level should be able to choose how they get to live out their one life.
Absolutely. And yet again, this is, I'm going to cite Jocko's. I don't think Mao read his own book when it came to ruling his nation. I thought that was just hilarious, because there is a huge juxtaposition on how he viewed the collective and to promote individualism, and then just completely, I mean, I don't know enough about the subject, but it just doesn't seem like it came to fruition the way his initial ideas were first developed. So it's very interesting. I would be curious to learn more about like that middle area of like, you have early Mao, who kind of knew what he was doing, was enlightened, was part of the revolutionary movement, and then you just have the cocksucker at the end of his life just killing everybody, I guess. There's obviously something that happened. I don't know. Jocko kind of glazed over that. He quoted what's his name for absolute power corrupts and that one. So maybe there was a little bit of that, is like he was corrupted by his power.
Yeah,
power tends to corrupt. Absolute power absolutely corrupts. Absolutely. That's yeah, what I was. Yeah, I'm missing sure. something there.
Which is why, no, you got it right. It's absolute power corrupts absolutely, which is basically, I don't think humans are meant to rule over other humans. Like, you're going to see constantly they get, they abuse their own power. There's no such thing as equilibrium in human relations. I was just telling, I don't know if it was a podcast or reading a book or what. I think it was a podcast I learned this on, but they were talking about one of Churchill's most, basically his main advisor was a good friend of his. And one thing that stuck out in the podcast, they talked about his unusual diet, that he survived his entire life. This guy was supposed to be super smart, supposedly. And he ate nothing but like cheese and olive oil. Yes. It's like something like that. But the reason I bring that up right now is because he talked about during the war, they had to restrict the I think it was the British population. It was really hard for them to import olive oil. Because I think they were coming in from like Italy or wherever it's mainly produced, as they were at war with them.
Yeah, Mediterranean.
But what Churchill did, because he gave his friend like a pass, saying, "Oh well, he can. The people can't get olive oil, but he can because he needs it." That kind of stuff, that
quid pro quo.
Is inevitable, because it's just, look how humans interact with one another. But anyways, I want to jump into some of the good ideas that Mao actually has.
Sure.
So it says, I just touched on this with the whole Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger thing. And he says, the first law of war, and I guess the Washington thing as well, is to preserve ourselves and destroy the enemy. So it's not the first law of war is not to destroy the enemy. It's, he said very succinctly, preserve yourself first. You can't destroy the enemy if you're dead. Second thing, which I thought of, there's a great article. It's available on Medium if you just Google Nassim Taleb, Intolerant Minority. So it's called The Most Intolerant Wins, The Dictatorship of the Small Minority. It's that was actually expanded out into a chapter in this wonderful book, Skin of the Game. But it says, revolutions rarely compromise. Compromises are made only to further the strategic decision. And so to me, it's very similar to the intolerant minority, where you can have a small group of very fervent believers enact their will through sheer persistence on the larger majority. So if you're a revolutionary, you're obviously an intolerant minority, meaning that you don't like the way things are and you're hell-bent on making that change. Another one that I thought was really interesting, and I always say this, where it appeared to me, Rob, and I've told you about this, I don't know if I've said it on the podcast, I definitely told you this in private conversations, but it appears to me that information has an asymmetric advantage. And what I mean by that is, it appears like it's much better to collect information than it is to give it. And Mao kind of says something like that on guerrilla warfare, because he says, guerrillas deny all information of themselves to their enemy. The enemy is enveloped in a confusing fog. And then this metaphor is spooky. He says, the enemy stands on a lighted stage, From the darkness around him, thousands of unseen eyes intently study his every move. So when he strikes out, meaning the enemy, he hits air. And then the personal note I left for myself was collect information, don't give it. As far as about yourself and your plans, or if you are engaged in this, because I think about this in terms of, like, you know, me and you are probably never going to engage in guerrilla warfare.
I hope.
But you could start small companies that can compete with large companies and adapt a lot of these same tactics, because they hold true.
That's a beautiful thing to see the small company able to fight the big company using guerrilla warfare tactics. That's kind of cool. That's motivating in a way, right? Like, you feel more motivated when you're kind of like the underdog. Like, there's a thing in sports where, like, and the study was done in soccer, so I'll go with that. That soccer teams that are down by one goal into the half often win because they're fighting from they just have more to work for. And I can see how, like, guerrilla tactics can go into that and be motivating to like, you know, you know the commander's intent. You're using all these brilliant tactics, and then you can be David taking down Goliath in a way, you know? It's like it's really cool. Like, it's thought-provoking and very, very applicable to just daily life, not just fighting in the jungle.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. It's not just about war. It's not just about business. Sports is another example. Think of Michael Lewis's famous book, Moneyball.
Yeah, huge.
It's about how do you fight when you have these huge baseball. I mean, you're much of more of a baseball fan than I am, but, like, you know, you have some teams where they're spending much more, maybe two or three times the amount on payroll. Well, if you're, I think it was the Oakland Athletics in the book. I can't remember. Going up against people like the Yankees or the Red Sox, and it's just like, well, you have to find other advantages. You have to understand that size is an advantage in some cases, but it also could be a disadvantage. And like you're saying, where I'd never heard about that study, but it kind of makes sense, where you're much more motivated if you're behind than you are ahead. That's kind of in line with human nature. Like, you know, a lot of people, once they get really successful or really a lot of power, they kind of rest on their laurels. That's why I think Jocko is so important, because Jocko is super successful in a bunch of different domains, and he's not resting on his laurels. He's still getting up every day at 4:30, still working out, still trying to build new businesses. One of my favorite things, so I love following him on Twitter, because I know he's really busy now, but when he does have a chance to respond, Twitter's the perfect medium for him, because it's so tight and concise, right? And so somebody's asked him, they're like, hey, I tend to get a little cocky when I'm crushing it. How do I, like, how do I not get cocky? And his very close to that, but it's three words: get bigger goals. So that, like, there's a lot of knowledge transferred in just three little words. It's like, well, first of all, you have no reason to get cocky, because, like, you're kind of shrinking into your own world. It's like, yeah, you're good at whatever you're doing. The world's a large place. Space is infinite. Like, you shouldn't be getting cocky, because there's always more to do. And that's the exact opposite of what we're saying, where, you know, large companies, large countries, very successful baseball teams all fall under the same mistake, where you just rest on your laurels. You get a little too comfortable. So moving ahead to another one. Gorillas always engage under conditions of their own choosing.
Yes.
They only fight when the chances of victory are heavily weighed in their favor. Again, I'm not going to meet you head on in the middle of the field so you can have drones and F-18s and tanks, you know, destroy my little band of jungle warriors with our little, like, probably, you know, machine guns made from Russia in the 1960s or whatever the case is. Like, that's not smart.
Yeah. And so that chapter in that I was talking about that also had Washington, it was basically about the philosophy of flanking. And there was a very interesting study. I wish I had the book. It's across the room. But there was a very interesting study done in old and modern military campaigns to determine the success rate of just going towards, like, you know, like storming the castle and things like that. What do you think? What do you think the percentage of success rate is for not being strategic and using flanks, just going right at it?
Oh, probably less than 50%, if not lower. Like, what
way
is it?
Way less. It's 2%.
10%?
2%.
Oh, my goodness.
It's 2 freaking percent. And that was, oh, man, I think it was, like they threw out a number like 7 out of 400 and something, you know, like these battles where, like, very, very low chances of probability. And to be honest, like, some of these guys just didn't know, like, I don't fault them for doing it, but I do fault you now if you don't know this stuff by now. So,
yeah, it's a good point. Like, now militaries can study. They have, like, at least a couple thousand years of military history that you can go back and kind of look on. So maybe not a couple thousand, maybe like 1,000, maybe 2,000.
They're back to way back.
But let's say you were in Napoleon's army in this, was that 1800s, somewhere
in
there?
He's like 18.
Like, how much information do you think they had about the past? I mean, they had books have been around for 5,000 years, so they've ostensibly somebody wrote down strategies about war, right?
Well, it depends. You know, Napoleon had like Marcus Aurelius and who else did he have? At, like, the things written about Genghis Khan. I don't know, man. Like, we're now just basically discussing what was in the Library of Alexandria, and we just don't know at that point. But there was certainly war way before that. So
yeah, he was leading military. I just pulled up his Wikipedia page. He's leading military expeditions to Egypt in 1798. He started in 26. Was he began his first military campaign? So, I'm very curious. I mean, we're just so spoiled now because we live in the age of information. We have the entire sum of human knowledge in our pocket. I just couldn't imagine. I want to imagine. Like, I would love to be able to go back and replicate, like, from a complete historically accurate, like, depiction of what set of information did these guys have at different periods of time, you know? Like, they might have had books and writings on, like, European military history, but did stuff from Asia get over there? Were they influenced by other, like, how, I guess the main point is, like, how much did information travel? Now it travels at the speed of light all across the globe. Back then, much slower. So, like, to what degree? It's just an interesting thought. So there's another one I want to go over. Very simple aphorism. Gorillas find strength in weaknesses. He travels light and travels fast.
That's right.
So we can see why that would be an advantage over a slow-moving, like, large army. Very hard to get them to move rapidly like you could. And in every apparent disadvantage, some advantage is to be found. This reminds me of that Jocko's concept of good, which is on YouTube if you haven't seen it. It's fantastic. The converse is equally true. In each apparent advantage lies the seed of disadvantage.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting thought because it's not like if guerrilla warfare was across the board, always worked across the board, then every army would be. Like, there's a reason that armies tend to, as they become more successful, increase in size. So it is good. I think that was, like, a good reminder that, like, yes, these tactics are dependent on the situation that you find yourself in. They're not across the board. You know, it's not like one thing is going to work and it's going to make you successful regardless of the situation you're in. You have to adapt it to whatever it is, like, where you're actually using it. And I think that's probably true about almost everything in life. I don't think there's just categorically good advice that's applicable to every single situation that a human being will find themselves in their lifetime. All right, so just a few more points here. We just kind of talked about this. Do not go head-to-head with someone on a point that they are dug in on. All you're going to do is create adversity. You are going to create a fight you don't want to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And so this can be applicable to, like, I have some family members that are super religious. I don't even, like, there's no need to talk about it. Like, it doesn't matter to me what you believe or don't believe, but I know that us just talking about it, like, you're dug in. Your entire life revolves around that. Like, I'm not trying to create adversity between you and I. I take Jocko's advice to heart. Like, I want to build a relationship, and I want to be able to build relationships to people that believe different things than me. And I think that's much more helpful. And this could be applied to religion, politics, nationalism, et cetera, et cetera. There's just no point. I think a better thing to adopt is, hey, I'm here to share ideas. I'm not here to convert or debate anybody. Holiday, it's just not a good use of my time.
Holiday said the same thing. Is like, why? Like, don't, if you want to change somebody's mind, don't necessarily open up the conversation about it, just like what you said. People's, I love that, dug in. But like he said, their strongest held opinions is not the first thing you try to attack. Is you go somewhere else, you flank them with something else, you find common ground, you open up communication lines, and then you can kind of see where it goes from there. But that's brilliant. That's the, he's dug in. You're not gonna flank him.
No, so. It's. I think to me, Jocko and Mao just have a fundamental understanding of human nature when it comes to that. Like, that's just not the way to convince people. It's got to be done slowly and, you know, on like a allied basis, not an adversary basis. But yeah, so that was all the notes I took. I definitely want to read the book just because it's only like 120 pages, so it's like a book you can read in an afternoon or whatever. And you know, you can get it. It's out of copyright, obviously. This guy's been dead for a long time, and you can get like a mass market paperback on it from, I got one from Amazon for like $6. So there's really no reason not to buy the book. Did you have any other notes, before we depart?
Nah, I'm not going to bore people with this voice.
Well, I kind of like the voice cause I can't see you. So now I feel like I'm podcasting with somebody brand new, which is a little, which is a little unique.
Call this broadcast The Stranger.
All right, so next week there's not going to be a book, but we are going to learn this. I've actually listened to this podcast a few times, so I'm going to listen to it again this week. The one with Tim Kennedy, they just take questions, which I think is very fascinating, because this is going to be more of modern military history, because they both recently served in the military, so they're going to be talking a lot about that. And if you want, let me just do a quick plug for my other podcast. If you're interested in entrepreneurship or biographies or history, I do another podcast called Founders. You can just put in Founders Podcast on any podcast app. Also leave the links to like Apple Podcasts and some of the popular podcasts. If you want to listen to that, I'd greatly appreciate it. Or you can just go to founderspodcast.com. And one other thing, if you're into listening to Jocko's podcast and then listening to the books that he talks about, we'll leave a link in the show notes available on your podcast player that you can get 2 free books from Audible. And that's it, Rob. I guess I will talk to you next week. Hopefully you feel better by then. Did I lose you?
No, I'm here. Sorry. I had the cough button on cause it's yeah.
All right. Well,
we're going to be back next week and we're going to be back stronger. And
thank you for being a trooper and doing this, even though you're under the weather, man. But I will talk to you next week.
Later.